Earlier this year, BBC radio and TV producer Stuart Hughes was one of many journalists covering the war in Iraq, as we mentioned just before 11:30. But unlike most of us who came back unscathed, he was badly injured when he stepped out of his vehicle onto a landmine in an area that was thought to be safe. His friend and colleague, Iranian cameraman Kaveh Golestan, was killed. Well, Stuart eventually had to have his right leg amputated below the knee and has spent the rest of the year learning to walk again. He has also become patron of the anti-landmines charity, the Mines Advisory Group, which we will talk about during the next little while as well. Stuart, I say good morning, but we've chatted twice already on the programme, but good morning anyway.
Well, it's good to talk to you again, Julian.
How are you now?
I'm very well, and yesterday I had an early Christmas present in a new leg, which was a nice treat. They didn't wrap it because I think it would have been pretty obvious what it was under the tree, so I took it away as it came. But I'm going through a stage where my leg is changing shape quite quickly as the healing continues. So as I say, my early Christmas present was to come down to Cardiff, where I'm talking to you now, and to pick up my new leg, which it's early days yet, but it seems to be a great improvement on the last one. So it's providing good service already.
Good. You can tell this quickly that this is somehow better than its predecessor, can you?
Yeah, definitely. It's rather like putting on a new pair of shoes, and I think you know immediately whether it's too big or too small. And gradually, as my activity has increased and my mobility has increased, I've been treated with ever more state-of-the-art legs. So this is the real deal now. And it's not a compensation for what I've lost, but for a few bits of metal and plastic, it doesn't do a bad job.
Because I was reading last night, you're trying to get a new leg for running with because you can't jog with the one you've got now.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I've learned all sorts of useless bits of information about artificial legs over the last year. And to put it simply, when you walk, you put your heel down first, but when you run, you put your toes down first, which, if you think about it, makes sense. And so the fact that I can't move my ankle means that I need a special leg which is set up so that the toes are pointing downwards. So that's to come. But And one of the other things that I'll be getting in my Christmas stocking is a leg that I can swim with, a waterproof leg that doesn't rust when you wear it. So that's another treat. I'll have a whole wardrobe of them before too long.
All these practicalities that doesn't sort of enter most of our thinking. When you look at it now and reflect upon it, here you are sort of joking about it, talking about what lies ahead, etc. How long did it take you in your mind to get to the stage where you could have this sort of conversation?
Well, I tried to talk about it from the start, although obviously in the early stages particularly it was extremely traumatic. I was getting over not only my own amputation, which happened about 5 days after the accident, but of course the death of Kaveh, which was a trauma on top of a trauma. Mm. But I was quite aware that all the advice that journalists are given regarding post-traumatic stress is that the important thing is to talk about it. So I thought if I could at least begin to talk about it, then it would help me through the process, and it certainly did. It's been an ongoing process, but certainly for my own rehabilitation, and also to draw attention to the landmine issue, I think it's very important to speak out, because thankfully most people in Britain don't come across a landmine. They certainly don't step on them. So if I can draw attention to the issue and be a sort of living example of what landmines can do, then talking about it's very important.
Yeah, I mean, I know from personal experience, of course, when you work for this organisation and you might get sent somewhere, one of the things you're talked to about is the whole sort of landmine issue and you might be able to suss out where they are, etc. But on that day, you had local people who knew the place very well, and they told you it was all right, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And actually, talking to some of the advisors from the Mines Advisory Group over the last couple of days, I've actually had some new light shed on that whole incident. And it appears that the Iraqis, for all their faults, did tend to mark out their minefields fairly clearly, either with fences or razor wire. And the area that we were travelling in, although there were areas of razor wire in the area which we were obviously keeping clear of, the area we were actually in was unmarked, and the thinking is that perhaps in the days running up to the collapse of Saddam Hussein's regime, the Iraqi soldiers were under close observation by the Kurds, so they came out under the cover of darkness and laid fresh mines. But unlike their usual practice, they didn't mark it out. And one of the advisors from MAG said to me, "You probably walked into the only unmarked minefield in northern Iraq," which is which is small comfort, but at least I know now that I didn't miss the warning signs, there weren't any warning signs to pick up on.
We can talk a little bit more about your work for the Mines Advisory Group, and Steve Priestley is coming on the line as well, Director of International Projects at that particular organisation. Steve Priestley, give us a sense of the scale of what you and Stuart and others are trying to tackle around the world here.
Well, globally, there's many, many figures put around, and it's obviously something that's quite difficult to be accurate about because a lot of the trade in landmines was done quietly and surreptitiously, but figures vary up to maybe 120 million landmines in different countries around the world.
The focus is bound to be on Iraq at the moment because it's in the headlines. I suspect one of the problems you face is that the focus keeps shifting because of a certain country at a certain time.
That's right. I mean, there's a limited amount of money. Mines Advisory Group receives some money from the private individuals and some money from governments and institutions like the European Union. But it's a fairly finite amount of money. Obviously, a couple of years ago, the focus was on Afghanistan. Before that, it was on Kosovo. Now it's on Iraq. And one of our concerns is that although, particularly following the Ottawa Convention and the publicity which Princess Diana brought to the whole issue of landmines, funds did increase, they're still not enough to really tackle the problem.
Stuart, is that a message that can be actually brought home for children at school in this country, or is it something that in their minds is just too far away and is not likely to concern them directly?
Well, it's quite interesting that a couple of months ago I was up in Leeds talking to some school children with MAG, and they'd spent the day learning about landmines, but of course they had no experience of it, they had no knowledge of it, and I suppose that's where I'm in a privileged position, if you like, in that I was able to zip up my trouser leg and take off my leg and hold it up in the air and say, look, I speak English, I'm a white person, I'm just like you, but, you know, I've suffered a landmine injury. This is what's happening every day to people all around the world. It's estimated that every 20 minutes someone is killed or injured by a landmine. So just in the time that we've been talking this morning, somebody has been killed or injured. So it does seem like a distant problem, but for huge parts of the world, it is a day-to-day problem, and I certainly saw when I was in Cambodia children playing cheek by jowl alongside a minefield. On one side of a piece of string there was a heavily mined area, on the other side there were children of two or three running around playing, and when you see that for yourself, it really is a horrifying thing.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's quite a party piece to go in front of a group of school children and casually remove your leg.
It certainly gets them talking.
I was going to say, the message would get through a little more effectively as a result, I suspect.
Yeah, teachers always say to use as many props as possible, so my artificial leg has become my number one prop. I've become a bit of a bore now. It's my party piece, so I whip my leg off. Everybody, all my friends are getting sick of it, but
well, you've got a new leg now, so you need to remove this one so that you can sort of, you know, repeat the party piece with the new one.
Yeah, it's like showing up a new car.
Yeah.